SRC meeting, March 25th, 2020. Okay, you're all set to go.
Call the meeting to order at 10:06 a.m., March 25th. Welcome. I'm Alan Gunsberg. I'm the chair. I'm going to ask, starting with Brian, if we can capture everybody who's online, please.
All right, Brian Sigmund, Besby Director.
Anita Mendoza, Vocational Counselor.
Nate Barnes.
Lucretia Jones, new assigned member to the board. Thank you.
Dawn Russell, Besby Client.
Kendra Valenti, The Hartford.
Lori St. Amand, Besby Staff Person.
Mike Buckley, DOL.
John Brady Alstrat, BEP Operator.
I'm sorry, that was Brandy?
Yeah.
Okay.
John Carnamola, new member.
Deb Reed, new member.
Daryl at Besby, but I'll be leaving the meeting room while the recorder's going to do other things.
Okay, so we got
Mary Burghardt. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah. Is there anybody else on the phone?
I think we've captured everybody. This is Alan Gunsberg again, chair of the committee. Want to thank everybody for coming out and dialing in on it today. I know things are a little bit out of sorts for people. So we'll start the meeting. Does everybody have an agenda? I guess
yes,
so.
Alan, before you go any further, because we now have 16 voting members, we need 9 for a quorum. And I only counted 8, so I just need to be sure that we haven't missed any of the voting members who I haven't gotten confirmation of. Do I have your permission?
Sure, go ahead. No, jump in. I thought we...
Yeah, we're short by 1. Daryl, did you leave the call yet?
No, I'm still here.
Hey, Daryl, I may need you to call a couple people to see if we can get someone on the line. So I'm going to check and see if any of these members are on the call, and we may have missed them. Maybe their phone was muted.
Okay.
Okay, I'm looking to see if we have Gary Allen. I'm looking to see if we have Amanda Billiott. I'm looking to see if we have Jay Brown. We have Lucretia. I'm looking to see if we have John McNichol. Looking to see if we have Beth Reel. Looking to see if we have Eileen Rose. Everyone else we have. So none of those other members have acknowledged that they're on the line. So, could you, Daryl, start by calling Gary Allen, and if you don't get Gary, maybe move on to
Amanda.
Eileen Rowe.
Amanda and Eileen, okay.
Yeah, and see what you can do to, and John McNichol had indicated he'd be on the call, so I wonder if he's having some difficulty getting in.
All right, let me make some phone calls.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
So, With that in mind, Alan, until you have a quorum, I mean, you can conduct business, it's just we can't conduct any votes.
Yeah, so what exactly on the agenda needs a vote?
Well, the only thing that potentially would devote other than minutes is the comprehensive needs assessment, but that's further down in the agenda, so we can hope that perhaps get our quorum.
So I'm going to then ask for a motion, if anybody gives a motion about the minutes from last...
You have a quorum.
Can't vote on that. Right, okay. Then, Membership.
The next agenda item was actually public comment, if there's any members of the public.
I didn't hear any early on. So should we go down to reports?
Yeah, we could certainly do that.
So let's start with, I'll start with technology, which is the committee that I chair. We have no report. Membership.
Membership. Okay. First of all, I would like to welcome all the new members to the board. We appreciate y'all taking the time to join us to help us through this. And other than that, there's no updates that I have in my notes. I don't know if Brian has something that he needs to share.
Yeah, I'd like to give an opportunity to let the new members introduce themselves. So what I'd like to do is go down the list, because there have been a number of appointments.
Yes.
And so what I'll do is I'm going to start with that list. Bear with me 1 second. And it's right here. So starting with this list, if the folks are on the call when I name the new member, if you want to say hi and maybe talk a little tiny bit about your, you know, yourself to the extent you feel comfortable. Our first new member in the category of employer is Brandy Altergott. And I know that Brandy's on the call.
Hi. I'm a BEP operator, and I run Gillette Castle and Rocky Nest in the past, and currently run Manchester Community College Cafeteria Services. And I'm eager to be a part of things with you guys.
Welcome aboard. We look forward to working with you.
Okay, our next new member that I'd like to introduce. Whoa, did we just get somebody new?
Yes, sir.
Uh-oh.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Who just joined us?
Melissa Thompson.
That was us. I'm sorry, Melissa whom?
Melissa Thompson.
Before she says story, Brian.
Somebody else just said something. I could not make it out.
Before she says story.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mary. Okay. So the next new member that I would like to introduce, who is not on the phone as far as I know, is Jay Brown. Jay Brown represents the State Department of Education. He replaced Colleen Hales. The next new member who I did hear who was on the phone call is John Carnamola. John is in the category of recipient of services. John, would you like to just say hi and introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm John Carnamola, and I'm really looking forward to kind of helping you guys out and doing whatever I can to give back a little bit. You've been very helpful to me, and I hope that I'm able to return that a little bit.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Very much.
Thanks. Okay.
We have another person on the line. John, Brian.
Yes, I'm McNichol.
I'm sorry, whom?
John McNichol.
Thank you, John. You now have a quorum, Alan. You now have your ninth member.
All right, good. All set.
So why don't we finish the membership anyway, and then we'll circle back to the minute. We're halfway through it.
We will.
He's still on the floor.
Our next member is Lucretia Jones in the category of recipient of services, and Lucretia is on the call.
Good morning, everybody, and I want to thank you for allowing me this opportunity. I'm looking forward. I'm eager to serve our community in any form or fashion, and welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Just joined us? Who just joined us?
Hi, this is Jonathan. I'm waiting for Melissa's call-in for the SRC success story.
Okay, Melissa's have called in. Thank you, Jonathan. Okay, our next new member is Deborah Reed, and Deborah represents the category of Disability Advocacy Group, and Deborah's on the call.
Good morning, everybody. It's really an honor to be in your company, and I'm looking forward to September when we can meet in person. I'm a member of the National Federation of the Blind of Connecticut, and I head up the central chapter. Looking forward to helping out.
Welcome.
Thank you. Now, Beth Real is not a new member, but she was reappointed, so we're pleased that Beth has been reappointed. Beth, did you by chance join us? Okay. Moving down the list, I believe I have heard all of the new members who have been appointed. The only other aspect of the report that I need to give is the sad reality that because nobody can serve more than two consecutive three-year terms, Nate Barnes will be finishing up his second term on June 30th, 2020. So Nate will be here for our June meeting, but unfortunately after that, his term will be coming to an end. And sadly as well, Alan Gunsberg, our chair, who's been doing a wonderful job as our chair, this will represent his final meeting because his second term expires on April 10th of 2020. So that, Nate, is my addition to your membership.
Right. Yeah, and thinking from there, I wish I could have been with you guys today. I think it would have been a little nicer send-off than being on the phone. But thank you for giving me the opportunity to serve for the past 6 years. It's been a very, it's been a really amazingly fluid time where we've gone through a lot of changes, things going back and forth. So it's been very interesting. And those of you who are new here, pick up your shovels and get ready to go to work. So we need to get a motion on the minutes from last month's meeting, our last December meeting. So has everybody seen the minutes, and anybody want to give me a motion?
This is John McNichol. I move to accept the minutes as presented.
Any discussion on that?
I need a second.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor of accepting the minutes as presented, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Anybody against? Anybody abstain? The motion moves, the motion is accepted unanimously, so we can go back to work group reports, I guess, next, and let's go to finance,
okay.
Which is, who's our treasurer?
Yeah, did I give the report on his behalf?
Absolutely.
Okay, there have been three purchases as we've started the federal fiscal year. In October, there were one for the consumer satisfaction survey, $23,606. One for National Federation of the Blind news line for $24,350, and one for the NCSAB, National Council of State Agencies for the Blind membership dues, $990. So year to date for the federal year, we've obligated
$48,946. Okay. And you said $23,660, Brian? For the first line item with CSSU?
The satisfaction survey is $23,606.
$606, okay.
So
okay. We have one more work group report, and that's consumer satisfaction, and then we'll move on to the VR success story next.
Okay, so consumer
satisfaction. So this is,
As motioned by the SRC, the Center for Public Policy and Social Research out of Central Connecticut State University has switched over to conducting the survey on a quarterly basis, and we did transmit to them the quarterly data so they could make the phone call. The way that the survey memorandum agreement is established is that we would still only get an annual report, but they identified for us any significant trends that we needed to be aware of and make adjustments to as they did their quarterly report. Thus far, they have not indicated that there are any trends that we needed to be made aware of sooner than the annual report, but I did just want everyone to know that they are presently conducting those surveys on the water.
That concludes the portion of our meeting with group reports. Did I hear Jonathan come on? Is he presenting the VR success story?
Yes. Hi, how are you?
So, Jonathan, if you could give us a little background on who's going to speak, tell us why you chose this person, and then let's go right into the presentation.
Oh, great. I'm Jonathan Richmond. I'm the VR counselor coordinator. Though I am not Melissa's counselor, several years ago I was Melissa's counselor, and I'm pleased to introduce Melissa Thompson because she has a great journey of how she went through college, and she's currently working. She works for Independence Unlimited as a core advocate, and I think we're really going to enjoy listening to Melissa's journey. So I will turn it over to Melissa.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Thompson, and I have been a client of BESBE for many, many years. BESBE has afforded me the opportunities to receive a great, strong education. I went to the University of St. Joseph, where I received my bachelor's in social work, and there, through the support of financial and assistive technology, I was able to study hard and go full-time and receive my bachelor's in 2013. I did graduate on the president's list with a 4.0 GPA, and
wow.
That was due in great part to BESBE, and because of the technology that Dave Bergman and Julie McLean helped me to master, I was able to go for it. So after I received my BSW at St. Joe's, I applied to UConn School of Social Work, where I was accepted as part of the Advanced Standing Program. That's where I was able to receive my master's in 1 year instead of doing it in two because of my GPA. So I went to the there and received my MSW in 2014, and once again, due to the support of BESBE, I did well and I graduated, and it was a tall order. So after that, I tried several times to find work on my own, but with the help of my counselor, I ended up with Michelle Carter. She connected me with Goodwill Career Center, and there I was able to strengthen my resume and strengthen my interviewing skills, and I was able to find employment at Independence Unlimited. Here I am a core advocate along with four others, and we work with people who have varying disabilities to remain living in the community. And my education has served me well in this position, and I have been here for, it's going on 3 years now, so I'm in that part, as everything is doing great.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Beautiful.
Yes, okay. It is. It's been a long time, but it's well worth it.
Wonderful.
Does anybody have any questions that they'd like to ask directly? Okay, then.
I wanted to add that even with the mobility. They contributed to my success at school, my mobility training. Because with that, I wouldn't have been able to do half of what I do.
Okay. That's awesome. I wanted to tell you that wish I could have met you live and in person. You sound like a very impressive individual and somebody who would have been successful with a disability or without.
Well, thank you.
Keep pushing, you know, keep doing what you're doing because it sounds like you're living your best possible life. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, so let's go on to the comprehensive needs assessment.
Okay, great. And if okay, Melissa and I will excuse ourselves from the meeting. Is that okay?
Unless you want to hang around and listen to all this exciting stuff that we're doing.
I think I'll just give Melissa a quick follow-up call.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Melissa, for sharing your story.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you. Have a great day, everyone.
You too. You too.
Bye-bye. Okay, so the comprehensive needs assessment, this would be an action item. We are coming up for every 3 years by the Federal Rehab Act requirements. We have to do a comprehensive needs assessment. The comprehensive needs assessment helps guide the state rehab council and the vocational rehabilitation program in identifying gaps that might need to be addressed with other strategies or resources, as well as identifying things that the program is effectively delivering. It is different from the Consumer Satisfaction Survey, which is a document that asks folks that have gone through services what their experiences were. This is one that projects forward. This is one that looks at census data and analyzes our program effectively reaching communities to the extent that those communities are represented in the general population. And again, the comprehensive needs assessment becomes a tool to help guide the program and the State Rehab Council in future years as to where we should be focusing some of our energy. In the past, this has been done by the Center for Public Policy and Social Research at Central Connecticut State University. They've been in a position to leverage the data from the Consumer Satisfaction Survey to factor into the comprehensive needs assessment and the recommendations that they then make to the council and to the program. And certainly there might be other entities out there as well that the SRC could contemplate if they wanted to try a different entity. But at this point, because we are going to need to start the process of engaging a vendor to do the needs assessment, I'm bringing this before the State Rehab Council. So, in essence, what you, those of you in on the council for a while, if you've had the opportunity to look at the last comprehensive needs assessment, which is posted, or recall some of our deliberations as a result of that, I would say that Central Connecticut State University does do a very in-depth analysis and provide a lot of information. But it is the council's pleasure if you want a motion to continue with them for this next survey or if you wish to take a different direction. But Alan, I'll turn it back to you.
Hey, Brian, can you come back and tell us what the date is that the needs assessment needs to be wrapped up by and published?
It should be done by December 31st.
Then I don't think we have a choice, and I'm going to address everybody. I don't think we have a choice but to pick the vendor that we used last year, only because of where we are today on the phone. So I would look for a motion to what Brian said to continue with the vendor that we've used in the past,
and just try to make this as easy as possible going forward. You'll have a new council chair in June, and hopefully the council chair and the report from CSSU should be able to get us to the finish line by December.
This is Nate. I motion to continue with the current company.
Looking for a second.
I second.
Okay, so we have a motion and we have a second. I'll open this up to the floor for discussion if there is any.
This is John McNichol. Do we have to enter into a negotiation process? What did it cost last year? And has any discussions been had with the proposed vendor?
I don't think it's an annual thing, but I'll let Brian take that question.
It occurs once every 3 years. And the cost, if they do it in conjunction with the consumer satisfaction survey, then I believe the last time this occurred collectively between the survey and the comprehensive assessment, I believe it was approximately $38,000 for both together. So we would need to approach them to basically come up with a new memorandum of agreement, since they're another state agency, and that would indicate what the additional cost would be for them to basically utilize their consumer satisfaction data results over the last 3 years, and then do the comprehensive needs assessment portion so that they could give us that report as a separate report. So I have not yet approached them because I needed to first approach all of you.
So if I could take this, it sounds to me like we paid an extra $15,000 last time, but 3 years ago, to them, roughly.
Roughly.
Again, I still think, and I'm going to say this again, I still think that we don't really have much of a choice at this point to go out and find a different vendor, especially with a December deadline. And the fact that there's only three more meetings before the end of December. So
Brian, if I could just, I agree, and I wasn't here 3 years ago at that time, and if it worked well, you know, time-wise, that's great, but there's no requirement for an RFP just based on cost to get other, you know, I'm using the word bids.
There's no requirement to go out to competitive bid if you have a state entity, another state agency that's able to do that. You're able to enter into a memorandum of agreement with that agency.
Okay, thank you.
If you wanted to identify private vendors, then I believe you would have to competitively bid it.
Okay, just wanted to be sure. Thank you.
So, this is John McNichol again. So, assume there's negotiations, do you have to come back to the meeting, the SRC meeting, to get approval to go ahead? And will that work in this logistical times to get it done by the due date?
If your motion, which I understand is authorizing us to go forward with CCSU, then basically you've authorized me, if this motion passes, to reach out to them, to negotiate the memorandum of agreement, get it finalized, and then they would start that process without the need to bring it back to the SRC. Based on the motion, as I understand how it's been motioned.
Any other discussion? So I'm going to ask for a vote then. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Did somebody fall off so we don't have a quorum? Or did
somebody? Hello, I just came in.
Who's on?
Gary. Allen.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, how are you?
We're just gonna finish this vote up and then we'll get you up to date. Anybody oppose? Anybody abstain? The motion passes unanimously.
Okay, so
welcome, Gary.
Hello, sorry I'm late.
We're up to the unified state plan on your meeting agenda, which is in new business. So in the last meeting, we approved our portion of the state plan.
Right.
And we sent it off to labor, or actually to disability and aging, who would have combined it with labor. Brian, can you give us an update on where we are with that?
Absolutely. So we did submit on time our section, the vocational rehabilitation section from BSBY, of the Unified State Plan. We submitted it to Rehab Services Administration, and they have received it. The next part of what occurs is that they review the plan for completeness. If there's any questions they have, they'll reach out to us. But there is also a category of this state plan that they are then required to do, which is new, which is once they receive the state plan from us in the draft form, they start the process of negotiating with the VR program performance measurements in the category of measurable skill gain. Now, measurable skill gain, of what it is the number of participants in the VR program who during the program year were in an education or training program that lead to a recognized post-secondary credential or employment, and who don't have a reason for exit that excludes the participant from the measure, meaning that they didn't leave the program unsuccessfully. Now, the way this measure works is that it's set for the state, which means it's a combined number between us and the Bureau of Rehabilitation Services. So what will occur is that once they've done the review of our plan, they will be in contact with the VRS director, David Dokas, and myself, and they will review what our baseline performance has been for the last 2 years, and then from there, they will work with us to establish what our performance measure is expected to be going forward in the new state plan. So that is really the next step in the process, and that all needs to be completed by June 30 because the plan becomes effective July 1 for all of the workforce programs.
Anybody have any questions for Brian on this? Okay, so we'll move on to the next agenda item. This year is the 100th anniversary of vocational rehabilitation run by the government. I don't know anything about this plan, Brian, so maybe you can get us up to date on it.
Absolutely. The original plan was that we were looking at doing something in Connecticut, some sort of a celebration in Connecticut around this by having a public gathering of some type. Unfortunately, as the world around us has changed so tremendously in such a short amount of time, we are now looking at an electronic communication that would come out from our agency in June to acknowledge and to recognize this milestone. The federal government, I noted the Council of State Administrators of Vocational Rehabilitation was also looking to do some form of a national celebration in a meeting or gathering format. And Rehab Services Administration was looking at something similar, but because of the current crisis we're under and all of the
cancellation of conferences and public gatherings. I believe that right now the only plans are for electronic recognition of this milestone. And I just wanted folks to know that Rehabilitation Services Administration does have a web page that is dedicated to the success stories and a little bit of timeline history and some other very good information around the public vocational rehabilitation program. So if you went to the Rehab Services Administration website, then you'd be able to read some of that. But when this agenda was originally put out, my plan was to talk about could we do some sort of like a public meeting or what have you, but like I said, the landscape has changed tremendously in a very short amount of time, as evidenced by the fact that this call represents the only option presently available to conduct a public meeting. So.
Brian, have they thought about a little video or something? Because I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that they can pull together, maybe something.
I believe that there are videos that are currently being done nationally that will get posted. Some of the success. Yes, they are.
Is there a way that you can send a link out to the Council of the RSA portion of their website that talks about this 100-year anniversary?
Yes, I believe that the minutes might be actually where I can embed that link, but if not, I'll send it out separately, but I will include the link.
Okay, good. Okay. Anything anybody wants to say about this topic? Then let's move on. Leadership transition plan. This is my last meeting. I'm sure we normally vote for new leaders every June. Is that correct, Brian?
You usually call for the slate of officers in June.
In June.
What is conducted in September.
Right, in the new fiscal year. The new federal fiscal. Okay. So we need to at least start to think of planning, right?
Yes. The way the bylaws are written, when the chair is unable to serve or can no longer serve or their term ends mid-year, the vice chair takes
right.
over the role of chair, and then the vice chair can either choose to have a vote earlier than September, which would, of course, mean the June meeting, or the vice chair can serve out the remainder of the term of the chair and then conduct a vote at the September meeting.
So,
the vice chair on the phone, that's Mike Bartley.
And the other thing is we will need a new membership chair, too, as Nate is leaving and will be at the June meeting for the last time.
Right.
So, Brian, do you recommend that we table this and Mike picks up and runs the meeting next time, or what do you think the best recommendation is?
Well, Mike is certainly the person who would be running the June meeting, but if Mike is still on the call and able to respond, Mike can tell us if he wishes to have an election at the June meeting to serve out the remainder of this term if he doesn't wish to, or if Mike wishes to stay as the de facto chair through the September meeting, in which case at the September meeting when the election occurs starting October 1, whoever gets elected here would take over October 1.
Mike?
Yep, I'm here.
What do you think?
So I think either option is fine with me, whether it means running just the June meeting or running the June and September meetings. Either options are fine. Whatever the group thinks is fine with me. I'd be fine with having a vote at the June meeting for a new chair. That would be okay, too.
You know,
I guess I'm...
I have a feeling, even though I won't be here, I would say that you pick up the gavel in June and we see where the world has turned, and we figure out what makes the most sense at that point.
Sure, we can do that. Yep.
Does that make sense to you, Brian, too?
I would certainly defer to whatever the council's pleasure is. I think that we really are in very different times than anything in the past. And I think if, from a perspective of continuity, to the extent that Mike is in a position to carry things through to the September meeting so that there would be a vote in September and an opportunity for the members to decide if it's by the time the June meeting comes, if they wish to be put on the slate for a vote, then I feel that perhaps that would probably ensure the greatest continuity of operation of the council, given that we don't know what the future seems to be holding at the moment.
Okay, and that's, I agree with you, but it's not for me to choose since I won't be here in June. So, Mike,
so I'm fine with the approach in terms of waiting until June to see what the lay of the land looks like, and I guess maybe at the June meeting trying to get a handle on the number of people and who those people might be that would be interested in potentially being considered for the new chair position. Does that work for you, Brian?
Whatever works for the council will work for me. I defer to your, your press.
Think we have to vote on that, do we?
No, because the bylaws make the vice chair the de facto chair unless the vice chair calls for a vote prior to the end of the term that you wouldn't be serving. He will basically run the June meeting, call for a slate of officers at the June meeting. That slate of officers will be voted on in the September meeting. He would be running the September meeting as the de facto chair. And come October 1, whoever got elected would take over, and then they'd run the December meeting. So
okay.
Mike is okay with that approach.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with that approach if the rest of the group is fine with that.
Any discussion? Okay, so sorry, somebody was going to say something.
No, I was just saying all good on my end. Thank you.
Good. So we have a plan. Everybody out there who's on the call, think of maybe taking on a larger role of service if that is within your nature and available within your schedule and your timing. So we'll move on. Brian?
Okay.
Report from the director.
Okay, so program update. I want to talk a little bit about how the current situation is affecting services and what we are doing. I think it is important to highlight across all of the programs that we operate what we are currently doing. As you, I'm sure, know, agencies are open. However, public access into the building is prohibited, and staff for the overwhelming majority of individuals at BSBY are telecommuting. There are other staff who are on various authorized leaves in order to either self-monitor for themselves, care for a family member who needs to be monitored, or they're home because of child care needs because either the school or the daycare has closed. So at BSBY, we have most of the folks are in a telecommuting situation. We do have certain individuals that, by the nature of their job, are being asked to come into the building periodically in order to move the mail and scan bills and things like that to keep the processes moving. But the overwhelming majority of staff are telecommuting. And I am, in fact,
telecommuting myself. So services are being provided either through telephone communications with clients, where
hello?
I think we lost Brian.
Hello? Oh,
wow.
Is everyone else on?
You'll have to read the note.
Yeah, I think everyone else
is on. All right, I'll send him a quick text message.
Okay. Going to say the same thing, okay.
Does everybody have an idea also about unemployment, and if you have any questions, or are we getting that information? Is everybody, hello?
I think they're doing a very good job of keeping people informed, actually. I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah, Deb Reed, we've been getting all of the latest from the governor's office, of course. Brian has been sending it to us, so it's all good.
Absolutely.
Yes, and I have been receiving it as well.
Good. I'm making sure, and it's coming in a format that you can understand, that's readable, that's legible, that works for you.
Yes. Yes.
That's for me.
Okay, that's... And while we're still waiting for Brian, anybody have any issues currently that you see coming up in the horizon other than distancing and being alone and the things that we can't handle?
I mean...
Hello, everyone. I got punched off. I don't know why. So,
yeah, I think you were being too verbose. I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Somebody tell me the last thing you heard me...
I think the last thing you were saying was how everybody was either telecommuting or on leave, and that there were individuals coming into the office just to move things forward, and I think that's where we were at.
Okay, so that helps. What I then went into was an example of, so if a client needs a service, for instance, large print key top caps to put on their keyboard, then the counselor would and over the telephone, we would arrange to have those key tops mailed to the client, and then hopefully the client has somebody who lives in their household who can assist with affixing them to their keyboard if they're unable to. But the only services that we are providing right now are remote services because they're of the social distancing requirements. Then I went on to say that just like it is impacting on how we are currently delivering services, many of the providers that we purchase services from are either closed or are also only offering services remotely. So as examples, the residential adjustment to blindness programs, we are getting notifications from some of them that they are not accepting folks to come to their campus right now. Obviously, all the colleges and universities are closed, which is impacting on clients we had that were attending those programs. Clients who needed a job coach, well, that's a one-on-one service, so unless that job coach can provide the job coaching in some remote fashion, those services are being impacted. And as we all know, many employers are presently closed, so job placement services are greatly reduced as a result. And our children's services program, because all of the public schools are closed, our teachers are pretty much remotely providing whatever services they can to support the students. And I was actually given an example of, we are having someone come in to do some brailing of a book that a student needs, and then the book will be mailed to the student's home. just to give an example of how we're addressing some of those things. And our adult services program, our independent living program, services are being provided in fairly much the same way they are in vocational rehab, by using the telephone. The folks still there?
Yes.
By using telephone and email communications, and then using the mail to send things to them, and then maybe working through, if they have some form of video conferencing option, maybe they've got through their phone a FaceTime option, or they can use Microsoft Teams with us. Those are options we can to provide, to the extent possible, some instruction over the phone or through some other medium to enable services to be delivered. And then in our business enterprises program, that program unfortunately is being impacted probably the most substantially. All of our business enterprise program operators are self-business owners. So they are their own entrepreneurs, and we provide support to them, but they are businesses, and they are in buildings where populations have dwindled to next to nothing in most of these buildings. And as a result, you can certainly imagine that the sales have dropped to next to nothing. And as a result, these business enterprise program operators are struggling because they're not really making the income they need. Some of the locations being micro, the buildings that are still open and have staff coming in, the micro marts at least have the ability to sell product that has some shelf life, so folks can self-serve, make purchases. But in the cafeteria settings, if the cafeteria is in a state college or university or some other building that is closed right now, that operator has no income at all. So it is certainly impacting on that program in a way that we are sharing information as it becomes available to us, whether it be information that's made available to us through the federal government or information that's made available to us through state government, on what like options might exist, such as small business loans that are being done. I saw that, I guess I'm going sort of into the legislative report, but I saw that last night the Senate Republicans and Democrats in Congress reached an agreement on the third coronavirus stimulus bill. I don't know what's in the bill, but I think that nationally and at the state level, there are efforts to try and help small business owners, which will hopefully recognize those small business owners that are Randolph Shepherd operators as well. So our volunteer program has been able to continue to make matches, but for the overwhelming majority, I think it would be a rare exception if any volunteer activity was occurring, even with social distancing, in the same home. Primarily, volunteer services right now have shifted over to telephonic communication. Our volunteer coordinator, Lori St. Amand, I don't know if she's still on the phone, she was earlier.
I'm here.
Has been working with some other entities to try and arrange, in some cases, to give an example, to make sure that folks have meals that can get delivered or have groceries that can be delivered if they're unable to get out of their homes. So that's an example of how we're working with our partner agencies to try and coordinate as much as we possibly can during a very challenging time. I will pause because there may be some questions or comments or clarifications that folks need.
This is John McNichol. I have a question. The program where, you know, of the cafeterias and everything, migrating whatever the new roles are and figuring out how to do it is going to be challenging for anybody, any small business. Is it an idea to have one of the BESBE staff allocated to start to try to understand that so that we can communicate with the people in that program?
Actually, we have an entire program, the Business Enterprise Program. Ed Owens is the supervisor of that. And yesterday, the Statewide Committee of Blind Vendors did meet, and that was an agenda item, and they have another meeting set up for later in April for updates on what we may have learned and what they may have learned. So that is an activity that is underway.
Thank you.
So is there anything that can happen for these people that you know, that are blind, that are not getting any income at all?
We do have, through our regulations, a minimum income assurance that allows us to supplement up to combined earnings. It would bring them up to $20,000 for the year, which is not a substantial amount of money for an operator who's making considerably more than that. But we at least have that opportunity available so that if an operator only made $10,000, we would be able to bring them up to $20,000 through their request under what's called the incentive plan. That is right now the extent of what we are able to do. We can also provide additional inventory to the operators when the locations open, recognizing that many of those cafeterias probably have inventory that may perish if they can't utilize it in some other way or sell it to some other entity that is still providing food service and could utilize it. So those are the two primary things we have available. One thing that I would like to just add is the Business Enterprise Program relies very heavily on vending machine income in order to operate. The program does not have appropriations through the legislature. So as a result, what we are ending up with is the likelihood that the available funding to run the Business Enterprise Program is going to be impacted to the same extent because there's so few individuals going into public buildings to make a purchase from a vending machine. So we recognize the dire situation of the facility operators, and we certainly will do what we can to honor that through the incentive plan to be sure that there's adequate funding for that. And we also do cover the health insurance. There's a section of the health insurance that's the employer section that we pay for the operators, and that does take a substantial sum of money annually in order to make the employer share of that, and we're going to continue to make the employer share so that the business enterprise managers would still have access to the health insurance. But in terms of what other relief might be coming, I know that, as you know, that Congress, as well as in state government, they are looking at whatever incentives can be made available, and I will continue to share those links as they become available.
Would there be any way to contact the governor or contact the legislator and let them know that this is going on? It would be a lot easier for you to, since your role, would it be easier for you to contact someone and let them know that this is going on and that there's people that need emergency assistance?
That has been communicated to our communications director. She has actually been instrumental in sharing some of the links through state government on the current availability of either small business loans or other incentives that are available. So we are utilizing a point of contact approach where we are having daily communications. Our commissioner has daily meetings with all of her leadership team, and these matters are being brought forward, and then she is our conduit for communications to the governor's office, as well as our director of communications, who communicates with other communications officers across the state.
It seems to have to go through a lot of channels to get to the governor. I'm just worried that these people aren't getting, I know some people that are in the Business Enterprise Program, and I know that they're not getting money right now. And it's important that we do everything that we can to help them.
As speaking as somebody in the program who's been out of work for 2 weeks, to colleges, like, we were all given an hour's notice to shut down and get out. So not only are we losing, like, money from not being in business right now, we are all have at least lost $1,000 in perishable goods that we haven't even been able to get into the schools to get out, to give away or to use or to do whatever. I was lucky enough to have another operator who was still in business buy some perishable stuff for me and help me out, but realistically, I still have another $1,000 of product sitting in the facility that's going to go to waste, and I can't even write it off as a loss because normally this isn't covered. This is like unprecedented, but normally to write something off, it has to be you lost house. You can't just write off $1,000 worth of food. This isn't a normal situation, which is another issue that we're all facing on top of having no income, the loss of product, and continued loss of product, because right now they're talking about reopening the colleges or universities until the fall semester. So that means everything that we have in the universities right now, in the schools, would be gone, other than our freezer stuff, as long as they keep the freezers on. And all of the vendors, like City Line, Cisco, and those places, aren't taking any returns. So we can't call them up and say, hey, I got 10 cases of unopened curly fries, can you come and pick these up? Normally they would do that, and right now they're not doing that. They're not taking any returns for the foreseeable near future. So we're all really stuck with this product on top of no income. And our staff, a lot of them are part-time, a lot of them are kids who are depending on this money to pay for their education, and they don't fit into all the normal guidelines of unemployment, and it's definitely very overwhelming for us.
I'm so sorry that you're going through all this. I don't know what more to say. I think that the government knows that everybody is in a place that's that may be a little dark and a little difficult, and I think the first thing to do is to see what comes out in this finished Senate bill when it gets to the Congress. I think it's going to be step by step. I think the governor has so much to worry about, including the fact that blind individuals are having issues. And it's the top line that's the most important in any crisis management. So I think it's going to be a waiting game for a couple of weeks to see how everything shakes out. But I don't believe that that calling to the governor and saying that there's a few, that it's going to make any major shift or any major change. I would recommend for people who are having issues to make sure that they go to their city or their town and see what kind of programs are being run locally, because those are the ones that at this point are running at higher speed and more efficiently. And I think we're going to have to wait for the state government and the federal government to work their issues out to see how it's going to affect everybody.
This is Brian. I will, at my 12:30 call with our commissioner today, revisit this concern, let her know about the conversations had at these statewide Committee of Blind Vendors meeting yesterday, as well as the meeting today and what transpired, so that she would at least be in a refreshed position to bring this issue forward in whatever venue is available to her to re-raise this issue. She is very much aware that we've needed to close locations, and I think, as our chairperson here has said, I think that there are so many small businesses right now being impacted in such a harsh way by what is happening, that there's still strategies that are being looked at and ideas being forwarded that have yet to come to a point where there's an answer. Even the stimulus package that was passed in Congress yesterday, apparently there's still some actions that need to be taken, as I'm understanding it, before this bill would be finalized and then sent to the president for signature. So I can't even presume what's in that bill, right? And again, I think that because this process is evolving so rapidly around us, we're all going to have to, if you will, kind of work within this process as new developments unfold, because we just don't know what those new developments are going to be.
Anybody else have anything they'd like to bring forward at this point? Again, I really think that if you know somebody having a particular or specific issue at this point, they need to go local. I think in my town, they're delivering food to people who can't get out, who can't drive to the grocery store. They have shoppers from the Jewish Family Service going out. If you look to your local government or your local town or your city, I think that things are happening a lot quicker than they are in the bigger places. Brian, do you want to take the last issue, which is a legislation update, or do you think we
Ernie, I think this is it by giving the update about Congress. So the only other thing I would point out is right now the legislature in Connecticut is closed. It says through Sunday, April 12th. So there are no committees in the legislature that are apparently meeting, and I don't know what the long-term implications are of committee deadlines, but I just wanted folks to know that not only is the building not open, but that right now are no scheduled committee meetings that I have seen.
Okay. So I guess I'm going to quickly wrap us up, because I don't really have a report, except to say I've really enjoyed my time here. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have been here and to have helped. I'm also very grateful that we never went into an order of selection or ran out of money under my leadership. So I appreciate everybody coming out today. Feel free to, if you need anything, to connect. You can get my email from Brian's emails, but I can give that to you. It's 24 F like Frank, A like Apple, B like Dog, O like Oscar at optonline.net. Or you can just call me at home. My cell phone number is 203-249-8071. And with that, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Excuse me. I would like to make a motion to thank our chairman for all the great things and leadership that he's done, and I would solicit other people to fill out the motion with specific things.
Alan? Alan, this is Mike. I just want to say thank you as well for your leadership and guidance over the last couple of years in your role as chair. You've done a fantastic job, and your departure is a huge loss for the council, and I just want to say thanks for everything you've done.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, everybody. So do we get a motion to adjourn?
Tickle made a motion. I didn't know if anyone was going to second that.
Second.
Who
That's
seconded?
Mike Bartley. Mike Bartley.
And make a motion to adjourn, Gary?
We have another motion on the floor that came in,
That's
and
right.
then we'll take yours. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 That's a motion thanking the chair. Just want to be sure.
Okay. Aye.
Thank you very much. Motion
Thank
passed.
You, Alan.
And now we take Gary gave us a motion to adjourn.
You need a second for that.
Yes, we
second.
Do. Okay, all
second.
Those in favor.
Who was the second?
Aye.
Mike Bartley.
Okay, Mike, thank you.
Okay, guys, thank you. Thank you for everything.
Thank
Have
you.
A great week.
Well,
and,
Alan, thank you all.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, guys.
Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Stay well, everyone.
Hey, Brian.
Yes, sir.
11:17.
Anything? I'm at home.
Meeting adjourned.
My number. So I don't think there's anything really to do, per se, but.
Hold on.